Saturday Night Live, group of alcoholics. Saturday night birthday speaker meeting. Today's date is March 27th, 1993. Our main speaker this evening is Walt O. from SNL. Saturday Night Live is located at El Paseo Shopping Center, room 120 in San Jose, California. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any AA member at the public level. The original recording and its copy are available at the SNL Tape Library. Thank you.
My name is Walt, and I'm an alcoholic. I like the time?
Yeah.
I dressed myself tonight. In case you were wondering. Some people thought maybe my wife had dressed me tonight, but she's out of town. So I dressed myself. Welcome to all the newcomers. If you have a problem with drinking and it's not working for you anymore, this is a good place to be. Alcoholics Anonymous is where I came, and it's changed my life. I was able to stop drinking, and that's something I wasn't able to do before coming here, and I had tried a lot. Tell you a little bit about me. When I was a kid, I started off right out of the gate feeling and seeming as though I was unusual. And I had red hair and freckles, and I used to catch a lot of grief about that. And I was real complexed about that. And for some reason, when I was about 3-4 years old, I got into a habit. And I don't know if it had something to do with the red hair. A lot of people, I later in life got a nickname as Flame. But when I was 3 or 4, I started liking to watch things burn. And I would burn things like our curtains. And they burned pretty good. And one morning I decided I would see how the angel hair on the bottom of my brother's bed burned in our bunk bed. And it burned really good. And so I caught a lot of grief and started getting in trouble at a pretty young age. And that just kept going from there. And when I was 6 or 7, I took my first drink of alcohol. It was, I don't remember getting drunk or anything, but I remember my dad used to drink early times. And me and a buddy of mine went and pinched a few shots out of it. And then I remember pinching a few more shots out of it. And I don't remember what we did, but I remember we diluted it back with water, and I got busted because we had taken enough out that the water had, you know, went from brown to white or clear. And actually, I didn't get caught. My brother took the heat for it. And because he was older, my folks didn't figure I'd be drinking. So, you know, my brother's 10 years older than me, and he took the heat for it. And I don't think he even drank, you know, but they sure gave him a good whooping for it, for taking their booze. And we went out and we drank this bourbon, and I don't remember getting drunk or anything, but I remember the warm feeling drinking it, that it was kind of good. But even though it tasted so bad, you know, that warm feeling as it goes down was kind of good. And when right about the same time I was having a lot of problems, we used to move a lot, and we just moved into a new town, and I was having troubles at school. And then I started hanging, you know, with the wrong group of guys again. That's what my mom always used to say, that I always hung with the wrong group of guys. And I always liked that, because everybody else's parents were going, "Why are you hanging around with that Walt kid?" And we were living in a federally subsidized apartment building. And I got a bad idea. We broke into a supply apartment one day, and this is where they kept all the goods, all the mattresses for the units and furniture and stuff. And by this time, I was smoking pretty regular. Yeah, 7 years old, I started smoking on a regular basis. And so we all broke in here, and we were hanging out on top of all these mattresses, and I thought, well, this would be cool to see how this burns. Still liking to watch things burn. And tried to catch it on fire, wouldn't catch on fire, so we left. And I had bowling league that night. I was a bowler. Used to have bowling league back in the 60s. That was a cool thing to do. And we came back from bowling that night and pulled into the apartments, and they had burned down. And this whole unit of apartments was gone. And I thought, oh no, this isn't good. And sure enough, the next day, that was on a Sunday, the next day, Monday at school. Now, these were federally subsidized. So the next morning, Monday at school, I had the FBI pull me out of class and take me in and question me. And of course, I lied like a pig and said, oh no, I don't know anything about it. And then they called me back in about an hour or two later after they had interviewed my other three friends, and they all had the gall to tell the truth. And so that didn't look very good. And of course, they all pointed the finger at me and said, he's who did it. And so that started my career with crime, I guess I'll say, because that was the first time I actually had to go, like, see a judge and do all this stuff. So the point I'm trying to get across is that, you know, before I ever took my first real drink and started drinking hard, I already had some quirks in my personality, it seems to me, you know. Now, I didn't know that at the time. I thought, you know, I thought I was pretty cool. And I didn't know that they were quirks in my personality. But anyway, as time went on, you know, we had to move again, of course. For some reason, the apartments didn't want us to live there anymore. And so they asked us to move. And we had to move again. And this time when we moved, I got in with a real good group of people. And we used to hang out at the park. And the park was the cool place where I grew up in the 60s to hang out, was the park. And we had lots of parks to hang out in, and I hung out in the park, San Anita Park, and that's where, at about 11, 12 years old, I finally one day hanging out with a bunch of the older guys, they got me to shotgun a few beers, and only way I could drink them was to shotgun them, because I took a few sips off a beer, and I almost, you know, my eyes watered, and my nose fizzed, and caught on fire, and you know, there was no way I could drink the stuff, so they showed me how to shotgun them, and I got about three Busch beers down me, and bang, man, I mean, it set me straight. And, you know, I went from a pretty insecure little red-haired freckle-faced kid to cool. And bang, three beers, and all of a sudden it was like, don't mess with me, dude. And I thought, I had, you know, it was great. I've heard a story shared here at Alcoholics Anonymous that I'll share with you that just fit really perfect when I came in. And it's a story Joanne M. was telling it one day, and she said that there was a guy that used to say this story, and it's about, she was being put together, and all the elves are working, and it's Friday afternoon, and they're all working like heck to get me all put together and shipped out for the Stork, and 5 o'clock's coming along, and everyone's going out and party, and the bell goes, and they kind of threw in the last few nuts and bolts and sent me off with the Stork and shipped me off with a few loose nuts and bolts, and away I went, and I hit the earth with a few loose nuts and screws, it seemed like. You know, and that's what it really seemed like to me. I kind of felt that way growing up. And then 11, 12 years old, here comes King Alcohol, and I shotgunned three Busch beers, and man, it tightened up every loose nut and bolt in me, it felt like. And all of a sudden, I could cope with the world. And then shortly after that, I got introduced to drugs and started smoking weed and doing that sort of stuff like what we did in the 60s. And you know, I hope I don't offend any of the older AAs here, because I know sometimes that doesn't. I don't mean to offend you. It's just that if you'd have been there in the 60s, you might have done it too. Because it was good. And it did the same thing. Well, it did. I mean, I don't, you know, it did the same thing for me that alcohol did. And I'll just be straight up with you. That's what, you know, it did the same thing for me. And I don't know if that was true for everybody. But, you know, it got me out of myself. And it got me into a place where I could deal with the world. And all that stuff. So, anyway, I got introduced to that. And before you know it, I was 13 or so in trouble with the law. I got busted down in this park. You know, the cops were always down at the park raiding it, and we'd always run, and I'm sure everybody remembers the drill, you know. And I got busted. First time, you know, the parents had to come get me, and they weren't very happy, and it was, you know, well, did you learn your lesson? Yeah, you know, and all that stuff. And then it wasn't, you know, a little while later, I got busted again. And then I had an incident when I was 15. I had my first real girlfriend, you know. Got my first real girlfriend, and I was dating this gal, and I was going over to her house one night about 1:30 in the morning. I snuck out of the house, and I was going over there, and I was drunk, man. I was plastered, and I had to go across some major thoroughfares in Sacramento, and the cops got me and pulled me over, and I had a little weed on me and a few other things, and the next thing I know, they used to search you. You know, I used to wear boxer underwear. And, you know, when you're trying to stuff things, you know, with boxer underwear, it doesn't work. You know, I've tried stuffing this baggie down my pants. And this cop, you know, said, spread eagle. And I felt it going, and I cinched my legs back up. And he goes, hey, spread them. And I didn't want to spread them because I knew what was going to happen. And sure enough, and so I got busted. That was the first time I really went to juvenile hall this time. And they locked me up, changed the clothes, you know. As soon as you change clothes, you know, this is serious now. They're making me get into these clothes. I'm not going home tonight. You know, the folks came and bailed me out again. You know, I'll tell you, you know, for me, back then, I mean, I made sure I stole the T-shirt that day when I got released from juvenile hall because it said juvenile hall on the bottom. And I thought that was cool. You know, I wore that with pride. I went home, you know, I went down to the park, and I had my shirt from juvenile hall. You know, I don't know, that's just how it was for me. And anyway, like I said, I had this girlfriend, and you know, alcohol was starting to show up a few problems. At this time, you know, when you're 15, it's hard to buy booze. I mean, I was, you know, I looked 15. I wasn't one of these guys, you know, 15 with a beard and all that crap. You know, I was 15 and looked 15. So it was tough to get booze. So we took up robbing liquor stores. And that seemed like a good solution for us, you know. It was like, hey, you know, we'll just strong arm these liquor stores for booze. So that's what we started doing. And we started going into liquor stores. We'd case the joints out, run in, grab the two closest half gallons to the door, and run out. And I always crack up when I hear people talk about their preference in booze, you know, and I always think, gee, mine was whatever was closest to the door, you know. Well, that's what it was. I mean, you know, vodka, gin, bourbon, whiskey, it didn't matter. It was what it was ever closest to the door that we could get a hold of two half gallons and bed. You know, we did that for quite a while, and then they started getting hip to us, and they put all these little flyers out, and so then it got to the point, and see, at this time now, I'm rebellious, I'm in the 60s, and I've got a red afro about this big. The only guy in Sacramento, I think, that had a red afro that big. Because for some reason, everybody would identify me, and I was always like, you know, it's like when you get into the little lineup, you know. There's no way we're going to make a mistake. Nobody else has got a red afro in front of me, you know. I mean, so I was busted. I finally got smart. I started, when I was going to feed things, I'd put something over my head, you know. I was pretty identifiable. To top it off, I had this great big white dog that went everywhere I went, and didn't matter what I was doing, my dog was with me. So, you know, it was the big red-haired Afro guy with the white dog, and it was pretty easy to spot. I got busted more than once under that pretense. That was the identification that the police had. And at this time I was really starting to impress the girls. It was I had a situation one night. I had this girlfriend. Like I said, I was 15, and we had done our thing at the liquor store, and now we're down at the park. And it was late at night, and I got my girlfriend there, or this girl who I'm trying to get to be my girlfriend, and this other girl, and I'm going to impress them. I'm hanging in the tree, and I'm going to do a cherry drop. You know, I'm hanging upside down, you know, and I'm up in the tree, and I'm going to do a cherry drop, and I'm about this high off of the ground. And I went to flip, and my legs let go, and I went straight down, straight on my head. As I landed, I ripped a big old fart.
That's a real blow-up. And I laid there, then I got sick. And so I know how to impress the ladies. That same girl is now my wife.
But at this time, I was starting to get alcohol was starting to become a problem already. Okay? Now, I didn't really think so too much, but it was, you know, it was starting to become a problem in my life. And I ended up, you know, alcohol and drugs got so important that, you know, I didn't go to school. I mean, I decided at about 16 that I figured out a way to make a lot of money, and I didn't need to go to school, and so I was just going to go do this deal. And so I started my own painting business, and went out and started doing this thing, and started to actually do pretty good. I started to get a lot of jobs lined up and all this stuff. And then I started doing what the book sometimes talks about, and I forgot to show up once in a while. And this was my first experience at having a business start taking off and doing pretty good, and then just destroying it. And ending up with people just looking at me going, "What happened? You know, what happened to you, Walt? Gee whiz, you know." And I had periods of time where I would be pretty good. See, I was a garbage can when it came to substance abuse. And as everybody knows that has done that, certain substances allow you to work better than others. And so when I was on the right substance, I looked pretty good. And then, you know, inevitably I would show up drunk and messed up, and people would just shake their head and wonder what the heck's going on. I was one that used daily, you know, at a young age, and, you know, it led to a lot of trouble. I ended up 18 years old, 19 years old, out of my own, you know, trying to do my thing, and I ended up getting into a substance called PCP. And I went out on a run on it for 2.5 years, and daily. I tried selling it, but that didn't work very good. For some reason, I never ended up with any profits. Never ended up with my money back that I invested, but that was my idea. My parents, you know, my mother caught me one time trying to sell this stuff, and to give you an idea of how they worked, you know, she asked me what I was doing. I said, "Mom, I'm trying to save up and buy a motorcycle." And she said, "Oh, really?" She goes, "Well, how much money do you make doing this?" And I gave her some line of BS. And she goes, "Okay, well, listen, how much do you need for the motorcycle?" And I told her, and she goes, "Okay, well, then we're going to set this up, and we're going to manage this, and I'll manage your money until you save enough money for your motorcycle, but then you got to promise me to stop doing this." "Sure, Mom. You know, I'll do that." And she was serious, and she, you know, bless her soul, man. My mother, you know, always had faith in me. And, I mean, this is, now I'm 18 years old, and, I mean, I've destroyed this lady's life many times over. And, but she still had faith in me. Dad, it was another story with my dad, but my mom still had faith in me. And, anyway, she soon got to see just how into it I was, because she was managing my my books and saw that I was using up too much of the profits. And the whole time, you know, they kind of thought drinking was okay. You know, a lot of parents of our society thought that, you know, it was like, "Hey, you know, if you want to go drink, but leave the other stuff alone." So they were okay with that. And I ended up, after a 2.5 year run of this stuff, I got fired from a job one day, and it was the first time I'd ever been fired. You know, I destroyed a lot of things, but I was one of those that always, I saw it coming, and I would quit or do whatever before I got fired. And I got fired from this job, and it kind of devastated me. I was 19 years old. I owned a house already in North Highlands, California. My parents had helped me buy this house, and it was a pretty nice house, you know, with a swimming pool and all sorts of stuff. I thought I was uptown, and I had a little side business going, and got fired from this job, and I went on a run that ended up just really creating havoc in my life and in my parents' life and most of the town of Sacramento at the time. And I went nuts after a 3-day run. I stole my dad's truck, destroyed it, took out 17 other cars with it while I chased a guy down the road that had some drugs that I wanted. When I couldn't catch him, I stole some little kid's bike. Little kid, I was on a little bike about this big. Knocked him off the bike and took off over to this guy's house and broke into his house and stole what I wanted. And ended up out on the streets for 3 days until I walked into a liquor store. And this tells you where my priorities were. Now, I'm 19 years old. I walked into a liquor store. Actually, I'm almost 20 years old right at this time. And I walked in. I grabbed a 12-pack of beer. And I didn't even like beer, but this was one of those ones without alcohol. It was like a little speeding mark or something. I grabbed a 12-pack of beer, a carton of cigarettes, and a porno mag. And I walked up to the counter, and I don't know where I was at, but I had like a buck or something. I handed her a buck, and I walked out the door. And these guys all came out and said, "Hey, man." And I turned around and beat me out of there, and then went on a little rampage in a hospital. Where I walked into a hospital. I was hungry. I hadn't eaten for 3 days. And walked into a hospital and just took some food out of the cafeteria. And then saw some cute-looking gal and grabbed her. And that was my natural way of picking up on women, was just grabbing you. And if you didn't like it, you'd usually slap me or something, and I'd do whatever, you know, but that was my way about it. And anyway, I grabbed this lady, she slapped me, I turned around and slapped her back, and this was a nurse at the hospital. And all of a sudden, about 20 people came into the deal. I ended up hurting some people really bad. Finally, the police got there and arrested me, and I got to go do some real time this time, you know. And the judges had warned me about it, and now here I was. I had 7 felony accounts on me, ranging from attempted murder, attempted rape, mayhem, and a bunch of other things, you know. And this is all behind alcohol and drugs. I mean, when I was sober, I didn't behave this way. You know, the problem was at this point was that I wasn't sober very often. Anyway, this gave me a chance to get sober and or dry, and it was an enlightening experience for me. I ended up, because I had high goals. I was one of these people, I always had big dreams and high goals, man. I used to tell my dad when I moved out, when I was 17 years old, I told him, you know what, and me and my dad, you know, this is when we aren't getting along too good, I told him, you know what, I'll be a millionaire by the time I'm 21, asshole, you know, and I just, you know, and he just laughed, you know. And that was how I really thought, and I had these dreams and these goals. And now at 21, you know, I spent my 21st birthday locked up, and so that was like an eye-opening experience. I don't know if I'd call it a spiritual experience, but a real eye-opening experience, this whole thing that went down. And when I first got arrested, it took me 4 months, almost 5 months, before I came off of all the drugs I'd put into my system. I remember sitting in jail, and every time they put me into a tank, I would create some havoc and end up back in a single cell. And I got busted for inciting a riot in a county prison because the cops tried to feed me something I didn't like, so I threw it at them. And so did everybody else as soon as I did. They're like, yeah, wham! You know? And made big points with all the fellas, but not real good points when I had to go see the judge again. And I had a lot of stuff come down, but I can remember sitting in jail, and I'm crazy. I'm nuts. I can't talk. My motor functions won't work. I can't spit anything out. I'm coherent. I can hear and see everything going on, but I can't get anything from the brain to come out of the mouth. And this has been like almost 4 months, and I can remember sitting there thinking, I did it. You know, I've done it. I'm a vegetable now. I had friends that, you know, took one too many and never came back. And I thought I did it. And I really had kind of reserved myself, thinking this might be how it is for the rest of my life, you know, that I'm going to sit here and I can understand everything going on, but I can't relate with anybody. And then that ended up wearing off a few months later, and finally, I got a chance to get healthy, and I made a lot of promises to myself when I was locked up, because, like I say, that wasn't my goal. I didn't plan on ending up where I ended up. So what I did, I decided when I got out that I needed to settle down. That was my problem. That I was going to stay away from drugs and only drink, and I'd be okay. But then they put a little stipulation in before they let me out, because I went to Vacaville for a while, and they did all this psychological crap on you. And they said that, I had violent tendencies when I got under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And they felt that maybe as long as I wasn't under the influence, I might be all right out in society. But, you know, so they put this stipulation on me that I couldn't drink. And for 5 years after I got out. And when I got out, I decided what I need to do, I need to settle down. So within 6 months of being out, I got married. Ran into my childhood sweetheart at a bachelor party one night. And she had crashed the party and came to see me, and I'd just gotten out of jail, and we got back together, and she had a little baby about 6 months old, and I said, this is perfect. You know, this is what I need to settle down. I'll have a kid, I'll have a wife, and I'll just settle down. And, you know, that's what I did. And I still don't regret that move, you know, but it was probably one of the more smarter things that I ever thought of on my own. And that's what I did. And I moved out of Sacramento, because as soon as I got out, I moved in with a guy who we used to do a lot of things together. And I could see, you know, I'd gotten busted already a couple times by my POs. And I could see, you know, that this was probably heading me back to jail. I had a 5-year joint suspended sentence still on one beef that if I screwed around, I could go back for five years, and I didn't want to do that. So I thought I'd better get out of Dodge. And you know, so that's what we did. We moved to Truckee. I thought, all right, we'll move up here where, you know, good natural living up here, you know. And moved up there and proceeded to have more kids. And funny thing was that, you know, when I was gone, when I first got out, you know, my POs used to condone me smoking weed. They thought that was okay. They knew my violent tendencies, they knew my personality, and they said, you know, weed's probably good for you. And they did. Now, this is how ignorant these people are. They thought that was good. So as long as I wasn't drinking or using any other substances, they okayed weed. You know, they said, that's all right. You can smoke weed. And so I did a lot of that, you know, for a while. And then once I got up in the Truckee, I ran a hustle on my PO up there. Told her I wanted to start my own business, but in order to get a license, I couldn't be on probation, and so I had to go through this whole big deal, and man, this lady, codependent as she was, man, let me off probation. And so I was done with that, you know, so now I could go back and drink and do whatever I wanted, and I did, immediately, you know, after that. A lot of good things started to happen. We were living up in Truckee, and we started going to church. And, you know, at this point, now I'm 22, 23 years old, and I've got 2-3 kids, and you know, I had 4 kids in 5 years. I ended up, Truckee's cold, you know, it's just, although I have friends down here doing the same thing, so I guess cold doesn't work, huh? But, anyway, we had 4 kids in 5 years, and we started, you know, I was actually in search of something. And I used to read a lot of positive thinking books. I had an experience one time when I was locked up where I was scared to death. I had to go to court, and this is after I finally regained consciousness again, and I had to go to court. And when I first got locked up, I was really crazy, and I did some really stupid stuff. Mostly I was pretty prejudiced when I you know, back then, and I was raised in an area, and all of a sudden I got into jail and I let my prejudice show. And I didn't know it, but I was on a wing that when they opened up the cells, I was one of two white guys, and that wasn't good. And so I had started some stuff that I shouldn't have started, and now I was scared to death because I was going to go to court the next day, and I knew I was going to run into this one guy, and he was a big guy, and he wanted to get me. And I had gotten a hold of a book. The book cart came by, and there was two books left on it. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and I was scared to death, and I couldn't sleep. And I saw this book. I said, "Hey, give me a book." And he goes, "Which one?" I go, "I don't care." And he threw me this book, and it was Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Prayer. And I thought, ah, great, you know. And I threw this book down on the floor, you know. This is what I needed, you know. So I laid there for another hour or so, still couldn't sleep, and I finally picked up this book and opened it up, and doo-doo-doo-doo, you know, there was this page I turned to, and Norman's talking about prayer. And he's talking about prayer in a way that I never heard anybody talk about prayer before. He's talking about talking to God. Now, I had gone to Catholic school when I was a kid. I was kicked out of the public school system in fifth grade, went to parochial system from sixth through eighth until they kicked me out. And the only impression I had of God was a nun with a stick trying to beat me. And all of a sudden, this guy's talking about talking to God. And he gave a little example. He said, as a matter of fact, it was like he was talking to me that night. He said, if you don't know how to pray, here's what to do. And he just kind of guided me right through this prayer. And I said, okay, God, if there's really a God up there, you know, I'm not going to pray that tomorrow I don't get my ass whooped, or I don't, you know, whatever's going to happen tomorrow. I just need to go to sleep, man, because right now I got to show up to court tomorrow. I'm going in for sentencing. I'm scared to death. I got to run into this other guy. And this guy, I mean, to tell you, you know, this guy's nickname was Goliath. I mean, this is why I got to go see. This guy's done time since he was this big, and now he's this big. And, man, I'm just scared to death. And I'm saying this little prayer that, hey, you know, all I want to do is go to sleep. And next thing I know, I woke up the next morning. And, you know, I look back now, and I think that was probably the first spiritual experience I think I ever had, where I prayed and God answered, you know, just bango. And, of course, I shook it off the next morning. You know, God couldn't have done that. So I shook it off the next morning. But so anyway, now I'm 23, 24 years old, and I'm in search of something. I'm reading a lot of positive thinking books because I got a lot of goals. I want to go someplace in business, and I want to be somebody and all this stuff. And so I'm reading all these books. I going to church, and I was trying to do this church thing good. You know, I was involved, man. I was teaching Sunday school, you know, and stuff like this. Now, this is, I always think back, you know, it's kind of sad because, I mean, Sunday morning is when you teach Sunday school, and that's after Saturday night, and that's not a good time for someone who drinks like I drank to go teach Sunday school, but I usually needed two or three joints to make it there, and I sometimes wonder what I did to these poor little 3 and 4 year old kids' minds, you know, geez, but anyway, I was trying my best, and I mean, I built a few churches, you know, a few congregations that I got involved with, but you know what? I couldn't get sober. And man, I mean, at this point, it's starting to be real apparent, I mean, that I've got a problem in my life behind alcohol, and I couldn't do anything about it. And now that I can drink again, I mean, you know, like I say, everything kind of did the same thing for me. And but now that I can drink, I'm drinking a lot. And I'm in a place where people drink a lot. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of drugs in Truckee. I mean, most people just get down and drink. And the people who I'm involved with were that way. So did the church scene for about 7 years. And man, I mean, I just never got connected. Never got it. You know, I saw other people that just came in, and man, I mean, you could see they got connected through that way, and it just didn't work for me. And it ended up, I had a business again in Truckee, and was doing good, I thought, and thought I was king of the hill, and as Vic C says, you know, I was flexing and a winking and all that stuff, and thought I was top of the dog, and all of a sudden one day, I had a problem. Guy got hurt on one of my jobs, seriously hurt, and I had not paid the workman's comp bill, and things went downhill quick. Next thing I knew, I was in debt. A lot of money. didn't know how to handle this, man. So what does a good alcoholic do? You know, we decided, well, it's maybe time to leave this town. And so we did. And I got a great job offer down at a place called Roanoke Park, and I went down there to build some subdivisions and worked for a big developer and thought, all right, you know, back in, no problem. But when this whole thing came down in Truckee, you know, it was hard to leave a lot of these people with what I had learned in church. I got to tell you, I mean, I was starting to get a few morals, you know, just rubbed off. I mean, you can't go to church for 7 years and not pick up one or two of the commandments or something, you know. I mean, it just rubbed off, you know. And anyway, we got to Roanoke Park, and then my wife, she's watching a show one day, and it starts talking about recovery, and my wife's also on the program, and all of a sudden she got this wild hair to get sober. And I thought, holy smokes, don't do that. You know, that seems awful drastic, you know. Let's just, things are going good now, babe. I mean, look, we're living in a nice pad, and I'm making big bucks, and, you know, we went to Hawaii and Maui, and come on, you know. And, you know, the thing was it wasn't about anything outside at this point. It was about inside, man. Inside, the money wouldn't fix it. You know, the things didn't fix it. Life was real ho-hum. Is what I can say at best. I mean, I was accomplishing a lot of my goals and dreams, and I felt it didn't feel good. Okay? And so we ended up burning another bridge in Roanoke Park and having to leave quick, and I found another deal, another subdivision to come do here in San Jose. So we packed up one night, headed for San Jose, came down here, and our second or third day here, my wife tells me that she's not going to drink anymore. That she's going to get sober in this new town, and she's got a new start, and she's just not going to drink anymore. And I thought, oh no, you know, gee whiz, you know. And so she stopped drinking, and she went crazy. I mean, I would come home from work, and she would just head for the bedroom. She'd start crying, just hysterically crying. I'd go, what's wrong? She'd go, nothing. And she'd take off for the bedroom. And so I kind of felt it was my duty to stay drunk so one of us could keep sanity going around that place, you know? And so I did. And then she got, she started coming to AA. And then that was, boy, that was, uh-oh. And she's serious now. And I had been introduced to AA about 3 or 4 years before from a friend of mine that got sober. And he had a year sober, decided to go on a mission and save me. And he came up to my house. This was still here in Truckee, and we had a witch burning thing go where you know, I went and got the stash box, got all the booze as far as he knew, and came down and did this, you know, burn thing. We burned it all in my wood burning stove, and then we prayed, and then he left, and I went and got all the stuff I'd stashed, you know, and but he left me with a big book, and so my wife, like I say, she got sober. And all of a sudden, she started getting perturbed by my drinking. And she would ask me not to drink around the house. And I'd say, no. You know, I'm going to drink around the house. It's my house, you know. And finally, she got real serious about it. And I said, okay, great. I'll tell you what. I won't drink in the house. I'm going to the garage. And so I moved my desk and all my stuff out to the garage. And took my dog and went out to the garage. And I was okay with it, you know, I thought. But actually, at this point, you know, like I said, I got 4 kids. I was starting to see a lot of things go on around the family. And next thing I know, my wife got us involved in a program for our kids. And now my wife's got about 3 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. She had about 9 months sober altogether now. And she got me involved in this program for children and for kids from alcoholic homes. And I'm thinking this is a little drastic, but, you know, we'll go check it out. And she also, it was, you know, it was, she was telling me I had to go to an AA meeting at least once a week. She went to one a week, and I had to go to one a week. And, you know, that's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I mean, you know, I often joke that, you know, I wish I could have came in here on a credit card, because it sounds a lot more macho than saying my wife sent me. But, you know, the truth is that, you know, I got here because my wife said, go to AA or get the hell out. And I said, yes, dear, you know, and picked up me, went to AA. And she was serious. And as time went on, all of a sudden, the next thing I know, she did kick me out. And that was devastating for me, because I love my family. Love my kids a lot. And at this program we were going to one night, they staged a little thing, and it was about an alcoholic family with four kids, and that's what I got. And I thought, you know, these sound the guns, they staged this just for me, you know. And we used to have to sign this little sobriety sheet when we went in there, and if you didn't sign it, if you'd been loaded within the last 24 hours, you couldn't sign it, and I had never been able to sign it. So you weren't allowed to talk at this place if you didn't have 24 hours of sobriety. And they did this little thing, and they did this role play with these kids, and it showed what goes on in an alcoholic home and the roles that these kids play. And it was my family. It was my kids. They named each one right off, boom, 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 right down to my last one being the clown, man. And they got done, and I spoke, you know, I went ahead and spoke anyway, and the lady let me, and I said, hey, I go, so what's the deal? So we all play a role, you know, what's the big deal? And she goes, well, I go, what would it be? What would be the ideal situation? She goes, it would be if you could play all those roles and not get stuck in one. And I thought, oh, yeah, you know, and that made sense to me. And then I started to see the harm that I had created in my family. And for some reason, denial broke through, and I was able to really see the pain that I had put into my kids. My kids weren't able to have any friends over. They'd asked a couple of times. My daughter came to me one time and wanted me to, she came up and asked me, she goes, Dad, she goes, would you not smoke? She asked me if she could have Melissa over, and I said, yeah, you can have Melissa over. And she goes, well, would you not smoke while she comes over? And we knew what that meant. It meant smoking weed. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, Kate, I'll go out in the backyard and do it. And then this little girl, she was 8 years old at the time, she just turned all sudden. She goes, never mind, Dad. And boy, I mean, that stuff just tore me up. You know, it's still today. I get real sad when I think about some of the things I put my kids through. There was a lot of nights where they had to crawl over Dad to get in bed because I was an early riser. I was usually up 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was passed out by 7 or 8 at night. And I used to just kind of pass out. And I had an instance that they all laugh about now, but it was tragic at the time, where I went in to help them in a bathtub one night, and I fell in, clothes and all, you know, and I'm laying there, and they're all going, Dad, you know. And but anyway, my wife had kicked me out, and now I've been to AA meetings for about a year, or about 8 or 9 months, I mean, excuse me. And so I knew there was this place. I came here when my wife ordered me to come here. You know, I came with complete contempt. You know, it was like, I'm not going to, you know, this place didn't work. You know, you guys are a bunch of lops. You're lames. You don't have anything I want. If I were like you, I'd quit drinking too. And, you know, all those excuses. And all of a sudden, I was sitting, my wife had kicked me out, and I was sleeping behind a Denny's on Berrios and Capitol, where I had to go, you know. And there I was behind Denny's, and there's quite a few other fellas that live behind Denny's. And I was kind of the cool one because my car actually started up and drove out in the morning. And I had a job to go to, but I'll tell you what, it was tearing me up, man. And I went the last night that I drank, which was the 12th of March, in 6 years ago, I went to get drunk, and I couldn't get drunk, man. And I mean, I was down in the booze, and I couldn't get drunk. And I got to a point where I felt that incomprehensible demoralization that the book talks about, and I got to the point where I felt a big hole in my gut, and I felt uncomfortable in my own skin. And I had heard that talked about here, and man, I felt it, and I had to sit up all night and feel it. And the next morning I tried getting drunk some more and couldn't do it, so I decided, okay, I'm going to go to an AA meeting. And that came to the noon meeting here at Live on Friday the 13th, and that was my last drink. That's my sobriety date. And it was amazing. I just came here, and I thought, I'm going to give AA a try. And I'm still amazed that it worked, because I came here, and when my wife was coming to meetings, she had met a guy, and I found a card on my dresser one night. And it was this guy's company's name. And I said, who's this? And she goes, oh, it's this guy I went out to coffee with. And I got to tell you, I was a jealous maniac before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So in my mind, my wife's doing this guy, okay? And I'm going, oh, my, you know, who is this guy, you know? And so I come to an AA meeting. This is my second or third day. And I met this guy, Jack, and he was from Southern California. And I was thinking about asking Jack to be my sponsor. He looked good. He had a Mercedes and, you know, kind of looked cool. And I thought, all right, I'll ask Jack to be my sponsor. And I think Jack kind of sensed it. And he took me out to coffee one night with this guy. And this guy, actually, we're at the AA meeting. And Jack introduces me to him. And I tell him my name. And my wife used to have a business where she did kids' parties, and she had a Cookie Monster outfit that she wore at these kids' parties. And he introduces me to this guy, and he goes, "You're Cookie Monster's husband." And I go, "Yeah." And then he started laughing, and he goes, "She kicked your ass out, didn't she?" And I didn't think that was very funny at the time. Especially, and then he tells me who he is, and he hands me his card, and it's the same dude whose card I found on my dresser. And I thought, son of a gun. So I ended up at a coffee that night with him, and this guy Jack. And then that night, this guy Jack and I left, and he told me that I ought to think about asking this guy to be my sponsor. And I thought, man, this guy's nuts. You know, he just doesn't know. And then I thought about it, I thought, well, hell, maybe we have something in common, you know. And this is my thinking at the time, I'll tell you. And so the next day, this guy wanted me to go pull a permit for this work we had to do over at this other building. And we got done doing that, and we came back, and we were sitting in front of his office, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And he had about 90 days sober at the time, and he was also in the trades, so we had some things in common, and he said okay, and we started this journey, man, of doing the steps. And I used to come to AA meetings, and the first thing I could do was clean up. You know, that was my first service I did here, and I was good at cleaning up. And I could do that one. So I used to clean up a lot. And then it gradually worked in as we did the steps. You know, it was amazing the freedom I got as I was doing this. You know, you come in here, and for me, I was carrying all this garbage, man. It just started coming off as I did these steps, and life started getting real good for me, and miracles started happening. It was amazing because I had gone the last 7 years of my drinking and drugging. I was one of these people that sat there every night going, "Golly, I can't do this tomorrow." You know, I had a conscience now, and I just would tell myself, "I can't do this tomorrow," and then sure as hell, man, the next day I was doing it again. And that gets really frustrating when you really don't want to do that anymore. And I come here, and just miraculously, and I don't know what it is, power of God, that you just walk in here and go, "Okay, God, I'm done, you know. Help me out." And I worked with, I had a crew of about 80 carpenters at the time. All of them got loaded. So, I mean, every day I'm around all these people all day long that are getting loaded, and I would just sit there and say the Serenity Prayer, and, you know, God would get me through it. I'd call my sponsor sometimes and go, "Man, you know, I'm crazy right now." And he'd talk to me, and I'd get through it. One night my wife and I got in a fight. I thought I should be let back in the house, you know, and she didn't agree. I was about 10 days sober or so. And I thought, hell, I'm 10 days sober, man, you know. What more do you need? And she said, "Uh-uh." And so I went, and I was going to go get drunk. And all of a sudden it flashed in my head what somebody said about making a phone call before I drank. And people used to say that a lot, about before you drink, make a phone call. And so I went, and I had 3 AA phone numbers in my phone book. I had a guy that was my temporary sponsor for about a day before I got a real sponsor, because I put my name in the box over there, and this guy called me. I had my sponsor, and then I had some guy, Chuck, that I had heard speak one night. He saw that I was drunk, came up and gave me his phone number. I called my sponsor and this other guy, Bob, and neither one was home, and I almost said the hell with it, and I started to close my book, and I used to have my AA numbers in red ink, and all of a sudden I saw another red ink, and I looked, and it was Chuck, and I called Chuck, and I go, "Hey, Chuck," I go, "I don't know if you remember me, but this is Walt." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I remember you," and he was lying out of his teeth, but, you know, oh, well. You know, we talked for an hour and a half, and next thing I know, I went out and crawled back into the Cadillac and went to sleep and didn't get drunk. And I was on my way to get drunk that night. And that's just how this program works. I don't know how to explain it other than it just works. You know, something happens here when we reach out like that. I've been sober now about 6 years, and sobriety has been good to me. Life has been good. There's been those instances in life that have not been good, but overall, it's been great. I had, when I was two and a half years sober, I built a business going again and thought I was really rolling hot and heavy again. And me and this guy, Gary, that used to come around here, were rocking and rolling and shucking and jiving and going to town. You know, when I first got sober, I really got into the principles and really got into this program. And then something happened and I kind of slid away from that around business. And I'll tell you, any of you who are in business, the principles apply in business as well as in our home and in our AA life. I slid away from it here, and I woke up one morning 2.5 years sober and hit a bottom in sobriety that was incredible. You know, I was lots of money upside down. I really thought that when I got sober, I would never do that again. I always blamed it on the alcohol, and all of a sudden I found out that it was my living that did it. And it was a rude awakening to wake up at 2.5 years sober, destroying a business, and, you know, I just, it devastated me. I had a bottom that I ended up crawling down on the floor of my shower crying and praying to God. And ever since that day, I have a tradition now of getting on my shower floor and praying. Hey, man, it just works for me. You know, I mean, I can't feel any more humble than when I'm sitting there in the shower talking to God. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, no suits, no ties, no nothing. And it just works really good for me. I like the sound of the water, and it's, you know, I'm glad the drought's over because now I don't have to feel so guilty about it. Because, man, I was feeling guilty for a while, but you know what? It was me and God, and I was going to, you know, have that time with Him. It was a great lesson for me. I had to turn everything over to God at that time, including my business, and it was miraculous. You know, things turned around in no time. When I let God run my life runs good. And when I just suit up, show up, and ask Him what to do, you know, it just works really well. And when I try and take charge, even today, I try and take off and take charge, man, and I can run my life right into the crapper as quick now as I've ever been able to. I don't know why it is. I'm just not good at doing life. And the only way it's ever been good for me is with the help of a loving God and through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only way it's ever been good for me. This is the best life I've ever known is right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I highly recommend it for anybody. And if you're new, I hope that you keep coming back here. And if it can work for me, it can work for you. Thanks.
I had was my sister who was 10. I was 12 and she was 10. And I remember every night trying to work through it as a 12 and 10-year-old can. What does this mean? What's going on? And in my own way, I shut God. And I also found out in sobriety through the steps that what I did was I took the family portrait and cut my mother's picture out and threw it away. And my statement to anyone from that moment forward up till November of last year was that I don't have a mother. She died when I was 12. And there was no connection. And that was pretty horrendous. What happened was I found out then